I'm Gab, he's Jules. Gray skies over West London, but that's okay, Jules, because we're going to brighten up everybody's day. We've got a packed show. We have the magic of the FA Cup. We have Barcelona drawing, but shifting Coutinho. We have a wild game with Borussia Dortmund's comeback. Yes. Inter still top of City, yeah. But let's start in the Eternal City.
Oh, yeah.
Roma against Juventus. 3-1 up. Juve come back to 4-3. We've got Don Hutchinson helping us. Jules, I want to start with you, though, because Juve is part of their marketing. They have this this thing called Fino alla Fine, until the end.
Yeah.
And they're all known for late comebacks and stuff like that. If you're a cynic, you might say it's usually a penalty in injury time. This wasn't it. This was 3-1 down, staring down the barrel, and they come back, score three times in just a few minutes, and win 4-3.
7 minutes, yeah. Pretty remarkable, really, the turnaround when it looked like Roma were in control, and they were. They were 3-1 up. Although they scored two goals on set pieces, one deflected shot, it was not like if they were playing Juve off the park, but still, they were in command of the game.
They were in control.
Morata comes on, and to be fair to Allegri, that was the right call. I mean, it's a no-brainer. We would have all done the same. It's not just Allegri who had a genius idea.
Landucci. Allegri wasn't there.
Yeah, sorry. But like you know, yeah. from a coach or a manager. And that worked because Morata gives the cross for Locatelli to make it 3-2. And then after that, you've got a feeling that something is happening.
Yeah, Don, this momentum shift at the end that we saw in those last 20 minutes, is it a credit to Juve, the fact that they just kept going and kept believing and so on? Or was this as much Roma falling apart? And you're going to say it's a bit of both, I'm sure.
Yes, I would say it's a little bit of both. But if you have to push me, I'd say more so Juve's character, because as a coach, Jose Mourinho has been in the game for 30 years, and at 3-2, once it got back to 3-2, he should have smelt that Juve were in the ascendancy and had momentum.
100%.
At the same time, you've got to credit the way Juve came back. I mean, the masterstroke, if you like, from Landucci, which I think is an obvious one. I don't know what your feelings on Locatelli's best position is, Gab. Some people like him as a sort of Pirlo quarterback type of player. I think he's better as a number eight when he can get forward. He got his goal. Arthur came on. That released him and Weston McKennie forward. They took more chances. As Jules said, Morata came on. He was better than Moise Kean. So towards the end of the game, it was all Juve. And the comeback inside 7 minutes was astonishing. But there was even more of a twist when De Ligt got sent off and Juve got a penalty and the Roman-born Pellegrini missed the pen. So it was a game where you sit back afterwards, and even this morning, you're sort of wiping your brow and going, what a game that was.
Yeah, it was a tremendous game. I thought it was a tremendous spectacle. So much incident in it. The De Ligt thing,
It's harsh, right?
You know what?
It's really harsh.
It's what the rules say. The thing about De Ligt is, we've seen this before. He gives away so many handballs.
The first season, remember, he had 4 or 5 penalties against
him. Yeah. And I think, you know, you see this now. The defenders are trained to just put your hands behind your back. And certainly that one's a bit different because it's dynamic. He's jumping into it. But, Don, I felt if he doesn't turn his back, then more naturally his arms stay in and he doesn't put himself in that position, right?
Yeah, you're right, Gab. I think it's one of those where it's a sort of natural instinct as a player when you're going to take a shot and people might argue you should be braver, should take it on the chest, take it in the face, but it's a natural reaction to sort of turn your back if you think the ball is going to strike you in the face. So he turned his back. Then once his hands are in that sort of unnatural position, it didn't really leave the referee anywhere to go. I thought the referee had a really good game. The only one where I questioned, and I said it in commentary, and I understand that I'll be absolutely in the minority and I'll be totally wrong on what I'm saying. It was just the feeling. Does he have to then send him off? I know the laws of the game, second yellow, he has to go. But it felt as though the way the game was going, it felt as though the penalty was enough punishment. But hey, I'll stand corrected on that one.
No,
the first yellow is a handball as well, isn't it?
I think you might be right. Yeah.
Who gets sent off for two?
The man has really large hands.
And
okay.
Big arms. That's
and he's got big arms. He's a big boy, right? Jose Mourinho afterwards, it sounds worse translated in English than it sounds in Italian, right?
Yeah.
But he did come out and say, essentially, you know, he didn't say his players were weak. He said, my players, he said we were great for 70 minutes. He didn't blame the referee. He said Davide Massa had a phenomenal game. But he said, I have too many nice guys in my team. Too many players who are good guys, good boys. I need some nasties. Don, this sounds like coach speak to me. I can kind of see what he means. You've been in dressing rooms.
Is that a thing?
Is that a thing?
Yeah, come on.
Like, can a nice guy be professional and determined and have just enough edge? Yeah. Does being nice mean that you have to be weak?
And no, I think probably what he's getting at, which might be lost in translation, is they're not streetwise. They didn't have enough. They weren't streetwise enough to see the game out. I remember Gab and Jules being at Liverpool when, you know, I was a youngster and Graeme Souness was the manager. And
oh, he's a nice guy.
A tough player, tough manager. You know, one of my favourite managers, a real tough guy. And he actually said the same things. He went, "You're a weak." He went, "You can't see games through." He went, "You're too nice." He went, "I'm going to bring in people that can do a better job." The next, I'll say window, I say that loosely, there wasn't a window at the time, but the next month he brought in Julian Dix from West Ham and he brought in Neil Ruddock, two really tough guys. Didn't really improve us because you've still got to have the quality. Both of them are good players, but you've still got to have quality. And I looked at Roma last night, Gab, and it was like, I don't know where he's coming from. I know where he's coming from, but I don't know who he's getting at, because Maitland-Niles landed the night before and was brilliant at right back. He went from a 3 to a 4. I thought Vigna played well at left back. I thought Chris Smalling and Ibanez were good. Maybe he might be levelling something at the midfield, but at the top end of the pitch, Tammy Abraham was good. Mkhitaryan was good. Pellegrini was good. So I think it's one of those classic Jose cases where in 7 minutes he's gone from winning the game 3-1 to 3-4 down, and somehow Jose's thinking, this is not my fault. It's got to be the player's fault.
Jules, I'm in the unusual position here. I suspect I will be, of having to stick up for Mourinho a little bit, just a tiny bit. Although first I want to mention that one of the things, back when Mourinho was now Mourinho and Carlo Ancelotti, of course, are, you know, they text each other.
Yeah, they're friends.
They're friends. Yeah. Everybody's friends. And also this is kinder, gentler Mourinho. But if you wanted to be mean and go back 15 years, I remember when Ancelotti in 2007, when he won the when he won the Champions League with Milan, which was his second Champions League, Mourinho had a little swipe.
Yeah.
And he said, "Oh, that's fantastic. You know, he's won his second Champions League. There are other managers, of course, who've won their second Champions League. But there's only one manager who gave up a three-goal lead, who had a three-goal lead in a Champions League final, and still lost the game." Now, again, they've made up. It's water under the bridge.
Yeah.
But kind of like what comes around goes around, because, right, this wasn't a Champions League final, but it was the Eternal City.
Yeah.
It was Juventus.
Yeah.
It's the only Champions League final he's going to be playing in for some time. And, you know, they had a two-goal lead, and they gave up 3 goals in 7 minutes. It was 3 goals in 8 minutes in Istanbul, yeah, as I recall. I'm sure Don remembers that.
But where I agree with Don is, and we talked about Landucci and the substitution that Juve made, that, again, where normal, we would have done it if we'd been on the bench. It's a no-brainer. And in the same way, If you're Mourinho and if you're on the Roma bench and you see that Locatelli goal to make it 3-2 and you sense it, I mean, in front of the television, I don't know what Don felt because he was really into the game commentating, but in front of the television, I was like, uh-oh, this is not over by far. And yet, nothing from Mourinho. Where you could have brought, I don't know, Kumbula on and go to a back three, which they used to play.
He doesn't like Kumbula.
No, okay, he doesn't like. It's not because he doesn't like him that he can't play him, right? Or Villa, or I don't know, anything. Do something, change something.
And he doesn't like Villar either.
Okay, no problem. Get players that you like then. But, you know, we go back to the Bodo Glimt game. Very different game, but it's not my fault. I've got rubbish players. I only have 11. The rest are useless. And it's the same trick that he's used for the last 10 years of his career, where when there's something like this happening, either a heavy defeat or a comeback from the opposition, and he clearly should or could have done better or differently to not lose the game in that way. But it's never his fault. He just washes his hand and says, "Look, my players are weak. They should learn from me, not me from them," he said at the end of the game. I was like, come on, what's this? Who says that now?
Okay. To put it in context, what he said at the end, he did say something like that.
Yeah,
he said, the
but
players have to come
mean?
Over to my position. I don't need to cater. You know, I'm not going to cater to them. What he means is, I'm a winner. I've got the winning mentality. I've got the track record that proves it.
Yeah.
I want to work with these players for 3 years and bring them over to where I am.
You know, or where he was a long time ago, maybe.
Or where he thinks he should be. I take the point about that, but Don, when I look at some of the defending there,
For sure, yeah.
No, but we're not talking about kids, right? So if you want to go and you know, question young players or inexperienced players, Chris Smalling played for Manchester United for a very long time. He's a very good defender, at least in Serie A. He's a very good, very good defender. He's Smalldini, remember?
Yeah, of course.
And yet, he made those errors. When he's talking about people who are too nice, is Chris Smalling somebody who's too nice? Is that who he's talking about?
I don't think so, Gab, because
what's he talking
Chris
about?
Smalling, I've no idea. Well, I'll tell you what he's doing. Jules is absolutely spot on. He's not talking about any individual. What he's doing, he's shoving it off him and onto the players, because in commentary, I said last night at 3-1, the next goal in the game is the important one. So Locatelli gets it at 3-2. Then you can smell the game. And Jose's been in the game a long time. He's been a coach. He's been a manager for nigh on 30 years. If I'm sitting in commentary saying Juve are back in the game at 3-2, you can't just then leave it up to the players, because you're leaving it onto the players who, by the way, for an hour, Roma were playing with a cigar on. Chris Smalling was excellent. Maitland Niles was excellent. Vigna was excellent. Ibanez was excellent. They all were. Midfield was functioning really well. Tammy Abraham had one of his best games. Pellegrini looked lively. Mkhitaryan was sharp. So you can't then just say, well, for an hour we were brilliant and I'm the king because I'm the best manager in the world. But when we lose and we lose 3-4, it's all on the players. Come on, you've got to take a bit more responsibility of that, because I could smell the game going away from them in that 7 minutes.
I think I should also point out, and again, double-edged sword here, but the guy who is Roma's most talented player, in my opinion, and most people watch Italian football, Nicolò Zaniolo, was unavailable to Mourinho. He's also the guy.
Even if he'd been available, he probably would have benched him anyway.
Well, it's funny because when he did, you know, there was the game when Felix scored the two goals he was going to bring him on, and then he didn't. And I pointed out, oh, big call from Mourinho. He doesn't send on his most talented player. And the Mourinho-iacs found me in the Twitter sphere.
I remember that.
And they went, no, Zaniolo's rubbish. He's terrible. Why is he? She's not the most talented player. There's these 10 guys more talented than him. I'm like, yeah, okay, right. That must be why Mourinho started him in almost every other game, right?
Yeah.
Obviously, it's pros and cons. Zaniolo's absence is not the reason that they lost game.
No.
It would have been an extra weapon. Although at the end, it was funny because he sent on all the Spanish guys he doesn't like, you know, Carlos Perez, Borja Mayoral. He just sends on more strikers.
Exactly, yeah.
No choice. You got to make it happen. Equally, though, I don't know that we should be too hard, because Pellegrini converts the penalty. It is 4-4.
Yeah. No, of course.
One final point on Roma before we dive into Juve a little. The natural question is, how long will this continue? How are Roma fans going to react? How are they reacting? And it's not really a question, because I probably know more about this than you do, simply by virtue of reading.
Answer your own question.
Being in the Roma sphere. So I'll answer my own question. Is the Friedkins, for now, are completely on board with this. Hmm? The Friedkins are talking about spending money. They've been linked with your boy, Sergio Oliveira.
Yeah.
Funny enough, Sergio Oliveira's agent is...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, George Mendes. Yeah. But it's...
And the sporting director. As long as we've always said, Thiago Pinto is there, nothing can happen to Mourinho, right?
Except, you know, Thiago Pinto is like, he's in his 30s. This is his first big job. I don't know how secure he is necessarily.
But as long as he's there.
The Friedkins seem committed to this. And interestingly, I think they are. The Friedkins, it's hard to tell because they never say anything. And when they do say stuff, it's completely bland, anodyne stuff. I mean, I wish they'd come on, you know, Ryan, if you're listening, come on Gavin Jules Meets. Tell us who you are. Tell us why you're there. Tell us what you're trying to do. But, What I think is interesting is they seem to be committed to this, and I think they're guided more than most by the Roma fans. And interestingly, while Roma fans can be hypercritical and are often hypercritical, the Roma ultras for now are really beating this message. All right, unity.
Yeah.
Let's stick behind Mourinho and let's evaluate
thing.
Him
it's
later.
A good thing. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, it's good. That's the
so
way.
So he has brought that connection.
Yeah.
With the fans, that is still there, and I think as long as that is there, you know, it gives him, it will continue to buy him time to work and to build. So I think, give him credit. He's still good at doing that.
Yeah, and they've had good games. They've had good performances. It's been a bit up and down, I think.
They haven't been any big club, which is the big thing.
Yeah, no, it is. But you see for an hour against Juve, what they're capable of. Again, they didn't play them off the park. It was not wonderful football. It was set pieces and again, a deflected shot. But still, they were very good in what they were doing and what he wanted them to do. So it's not completely terrible. However, if Fiorentina win the two games in hand, I think they go 6 points clear of Roma, and that's just for fifth place, let alone fourth place. So, you know, what happens if they finish seven or eight? Is that a good season?
I would say no. I would say, no, it's a worse season than last year when, you know, they reached the semifinals of the Europa League and everybody was injured and they had a change of ownership. And our boy Paulo Fonseca was found
and
out
the football was
March
better.
And the football was far better. And they were they were in fourth place as late as March. But, hey, Don, I want to transition it to Juve because we got to talk Paulo Dybala because Arriva Bene, who comes from Ferrari, who is Juventus's new, not new anymore, but chief executive.
Yeah.
And there is an appointment, I think, that was made not so much by Andrea Agnelli on his own, but he was kind of put there by the Agnelli family as a whole, as somebody who's external to what happened the last few years. He's come out and he said, well, if Paulo Dybala wants a new contract, he has to earn his new contract. And you know, the headline figures out there is that he wants 10 million euros a year net, which is Kevin De Bruyne type money. I mean, let's face it, right? That's what we're talking about. And my view is, given his age, given what he's produced before, given he's produced, you don't go near that. You say, listen, I don't know how many clubs out there want you. You stick around. If you want to, we can pay you this much. If not,
is Juve's offer 8 million, right?
I think it's actually less than that. Okay. I think 8 million is the number put out. But it should be less, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But then he goes out and he scores that phenomenal goal. Because that was a tremendous goal. That was so Dybala.
So Dybala.
Don, how good a goal was that? And is there a reason we don't see this more often? Well, what's wrong with this guy?
Well, I think he's coming off the back, isn't he, over the last 18 months of having one or two sort of small niggles, I think, one or two injury problems. His health wasn't particularly good. He couldn't quite recover after
games.
He had
COVID and whatever.
He had COVID for like 6 months or something in a row.
Exactly. But you see the guy when he plays and when he's on it. I said last night, silky, that's what he is. He's cream. The goal is amazing. Technically, he's brilliant. Finances, well above my pay grade, but if you move Dybala on and a player of his quality, how much do you then have to go and spend to try and replace him? That seems more to me. So I would be inclined to keep him on. You see what Insigne's done. Insigne's made the move. I think Napoli were offering in and around 3 or 4 million. He's then got 12, 13 million. So money does talk, obviously. But if I'm Juve, I think there's more pressing problems than Dybala. I think they need number 9. Someone that he can actually play off. You know, you think that
Morata thanks you for the vote of confidence, Don.
For all your love.
Well, listen, I think he might be on borrowed time. I think they need a new one, someone a bit fresher, a little bit quicker. You can liken it to when, I know I'm going back a long time, but when the Premier League had the number 10s, you know, people like Zola, and you had people like Cantona, more so Bergkamp and Anelka, Ian Wright, where you've got a classic number 10 who's silky and a quick centre forward who can finish. Maybe Moise Kean might grow into that person, but Juve, for sure, I'm trying to tie him down to a new deal.
You know what? I could see what you're saying.
Me too.
If they were going to play 4-4-2 or 4-2-3-1, but it doesn't look like this is what they're going to do because the reality is Juve's most important player, assuming he's fit, Chiesa. Knock on wood, is Chiesa, right? So this is still Allegri. It's still Serie A. If Dybala's, and I think the problem is, what is Dybala's position? Dybala played his best football, actually, when he was at Palermo, when he was playing center forward, right? I mean, he had Franco Vasquez behind him. They played on the counter a lot, and he was devastating. Yeah. That was, I think, the best that we've seen of Dybala. And that's nearly 10 years ago by the way. If you play Dybala in the hole with Morata or with another center forward that you like more than Morata, you can't really have attacking wingers.
No, it's a 4-2-4 and it's a very, very attacking and it's so not like what Allegri would do.
Yeah, and your central midfielders are going to run themselves into the ground.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the... If Dybala had a position that he plays and that we knew and we understood, I think it would be a different issue.
Yeah.
That's why I think you have to treat Dybala as a value added. If you say, we're not going to build our team around you because you're 28 years old and we shouldn't build a team around you. The point that you make... How much would it cost to replace Dybala? Well, I would say, how much does it cost to replace somebody who's contributed very little over the past 12 months?
Yeah, but it's more to find someone as talented as him.
Through the magic of amortization, right, you get somebody, and even if you have to pay 50 or 60 million, the numbers will add up. You know, you can go and you can do that.
So the thing is,
if you get somebody who's younger and who you think can grow into that role, and if he's younger and it doesn't work out, you can still sell him and get something back, and you're not going to be on the Aaron Ramsey plan.
Okay. I get your point. I dream of a Vlahovic Dybala front two. I have to be honest here. I really do. With Chiesa and Kulusevski and Locatelli and all of that.
That's a Fiorentina fan's nightmare.
I know, but still, I see your point about the tactics. although I think for a club like Juve, you should have different ammunition in your squad, so you can play 4-3-3, and maybe in that system there's no room for Dybala. You can play 4-4-2, you can play 4-2-3-1, and there's room for Dybala behind a striker and still have Chiesa wide and someone else on the other side. You know, there's a lot of things you could play, but you should have a squad big enough to fit in Dybala, even if you don't play him every single minute of every single game, because he still could be very valuable to you, depending on the opposition, depending on the form, fitness of other players that you have. I would not let him go, I have to say. Certainly for no transfer fees whatsoever.
We've talked about Juve and Roma for nearly 20 minutes now, and nobody has yet mentioned the C word, and we are contractually obligated to remind everybody that Cristiano Ronaldo, who I think is a pretty good player and scored a couple goals for Juventus last year, left on the last day of the transfer window and was replaced kind of haphazardly by Moise Kean, who, you know, might have a nice future, but is not Cristiano Ronaldo. Is this an alibi, Don? I mean, when you think about the transition from playing with Cristiano, where everything is obviously naturally, logically focused on Cristiano, which is what this team had been doing the last 3 years, to all of a sudden he's gone. The guy who replaces him comes off the bench, the guy who replaces him in the squad. That, to me, seems like a pretty big alibi, because if I replace Cristiano with Kean, I will naturally be starting off from a far worse position, right?
Yeah, totally true. I think it's the state of how Juventus have found themselves in, like Barcelona, like Real Madrid, like many clubs across Europe over the last 2 years. They've sort of been a little bit static. And what they thought, they looked at the individuals, they evaluated their squad, and on paper you think Juve, excellent squad. Same as Barca, same as Real Madrid. But Father Time starts to catch up to the players. Players then can become a little bit stale. You mentioned players like Aaron Ramsey. How long can Chiellini keep going on for? Warrior of a player. You know, at some point, a dress room needs freshening up, and you need to freshen up with young players, you need to freshen up with quality. And I think that's what's been coming out from the hierarchy at Juve. They are troubled. They are, whenever I'm reading the blogs online about the finances of Juve, they've got to try and see this season through because of COVID and the lack of fans and how much wages they're actually shelling out every single week. So it might be a state, and I think I heard...
But sorry if I jump in, Don. I'm talking more just football-wise, right? You do all preseason. You were in the dressing room, right? You've made preparations. You prepare. Okay.
But they knew he wanted to go.
They knew he wanted to go. But the reality is, you know, despite Solskjaer coming out and Pinocchioing his way and saying, oh, he only became available now at the end of August. No, he's been available since June, right? Yeah. Once you get there, you have to do your preseason with Cristiano, right? Can you just talk about that sort of tactically in terms of team balance? You have this outstanding player and you're going to ride him, right? Because he's your workhorse. And then all of a sudden, and this is what you prepare for all season, and then all of a sudden he's gone and he's replaced by somebody else and you have to reinvent everything. How difficult is it to do that as a manager? And is this an alibi for Allegri? Is this a mitigating circumstance?
I mean, in short, the players that they've got are not good enough. And Cristiano Ronaldo, I wouldn't say carried them, but I think he'd done his job. Everyone's saying, well, he didn't win the Champions League. Well, you can't do it on your own. So they decided financially, whatever reason it might have been, he wanted to leave. He's gone. So then you look at the players and you look at the pre-season. It's not that hard to try and fit different players into a different system, as Jules said. Now, Juventus are one of the biggest clubs in the world. You can play number 10. You look what Roma are doing. They seem to fit Pellegrini and Mkhitaryan in. Look what Inter are doing. They have five across midfield. They still play two strikers up top. So the quality is just not there for Juve. They're trying to get by on a squad that's been assembled and quite a stale squad over the last 4 or 5, 6 years. What they need is, as I keep referring to, they need to try and freshen up. But maybe that's going to be next season. And Agnelli said that a couple of months ago. We need to see the season through. We need to finish in a Champions League spot. Then we can go again. That's where I think Juve are lacking, the freshen up of people like Locatelli, brilliant player, but they need more. Juventus, one of the biggest clubs in the world. They can't settle for being in a Europa League spot. They've got to aim for winning leagues every season.
Your point is valid because he's still top scorer in 2021 when he only played between January and May. So, like, you know, there's something clearly not right. The thing is, Bonucci said a few weeks ago that they lost their DNA without him. I mean, I don't know what DNA means in football, but anyway, that's, you know, and you can get the spirit maybe or the way they played as a team, and instead it was far too individualized for Cristiano. So in a sense, even if that was really late in August and you couldn't really replace him by maybe someone you would have wanted, i.e. a Vlahovic, let's say, or right. a pure goal scorer, I guess that was a chance as well to go back maybe to what Juve were good at before he came, and especially with Allegri, who was very good before Cristiano came to the club.
The problem is that football that they played before isn't the kind of football that's successful in Europe today.
Yeah, no, true, that's true. But then Bonucci clearly seemed to be hinting as, okay, Cristiano was great and scored tons of goals and he was brilliant and we won, you know, well, one of the three seasons, but still. But there was something missing as well with him being in the team that now, without him, we can go back to. So I guess it is a bit of an alibi for Allegri, who can always say, but look, you know, what am I supposed to do if on the 1st of September I have to change everything? However, it seems that some of the players clearly felt that something was missing when Cristiano was there.
Oh, no, I don't think there's any question that there was a sense of that. But I don't know. Maybe I think in Italy we obsess over training routines and training schedules.
No, but I think it's
pre-season,
a fair point.
Much more than in England, right? In England, it's like, oh, look, you know, think about the number of times in England people sack managers and like early, like in August or in September, the transfer window just closed. You know, like we've seen this happen, right?
I know, but nobody talks as about. Well. I mean, come
in
on.
Italy, maybe we're more. Yeah, I know, but we're more obsessive about the importance of preseason. The manager says, oh, I couldn't do my preseason program. Here, it's like, all right, lads, you know, do a couple laps around the pitch, and then we'll have a kick. Am I wrong, Don? Is that what preseason training was like when you were
time,
Liverpool?
Yeah. In Don's time, yeah.
It's a little bit more complicated than that, to be honest, Gab. You practice different systems and different formations, but essentially, it's about getting your base fitness in, so a lot of running.
Gab, the bad news of the game for Juve, though, is the injury of Federico Chiesa, which looked bad watching the game, and now has been confirmed.
It's one of those injuries where there's no contact, and so you're like, all right, if somebody's in that much pain, but also they walk off of their own accord. It looks ACL, and Juventus confirming again it is an anterior cruciate ligament injury. He's going to undergo surgery later this week. It's going to be, you know, at least 6 months, and then rehab begins. And as you know from ACLs, even after you return to playing, it takes a long time to go and kind of find yourself again.
I know you're feeling stressed already, and what if he's not back on time?
I think the reality is, right, more macro from an Italy perspective, Chiesa or no Chiesa, if, and again, it depends how these games pan out, but, you know, Italy shouldn't need to rely on Federico Chiesa to qualify for a World Cup, right?
No.
That's the fundamental point.
No.
We wouldn't be in this position if Jorginho hadn't missed those two penalties. And as grateful as Italy fans will be for Jorginho for helping to deliver the Euros, this is the reality of it.
Yeah.
They had their chances. That said, obviously Chiesa is a massive value added. And while there are a lot of other young players who are coming through, and now we're all getting very excited about Aspadori and Scamacca, and Berardi's played. Oh, I just mentioned three Sassuolo players. Imagine that in one go. The reality is it's Federico Chiesa.
It'd be tougher without him, for sure.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Gab. Just go to Indeed.com/Gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough Roma Juve. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Paul Pogba, who I believe is a champion of the world, will miss another 6 weeks for Manchester United. Jos, I guess his injury means he will definitely see out the season and probably leave Old Trafford on a free transfer.
We don't know that yet. We don't know what's going to happen after June. He hasn't made his mind up. There's an offer from the club, as we know, or certainly talks for an offer and numbers and all of that.
How is Rangnick going to decide if he wants to keep him if he never sees him train?
True, that's why he will eventually do that from February onwards, because that injury that, remember, he suffered in France, just a normal like left foot shot with France at training one evening in Clairefontaine. I don't think any of us thought he would be out for so long, but this is what happened. It's taking a long time to heal properly. I don't think he wants to take any risk either, so let's see when he comes back, because I think they could really do, and Rangnick could do with him. Sticking with United, who play Aston Villa, by the way, Gab, in a few hours on Monday night, as we record the show on Monday, the Daily Mail reports that new chief executive Richard Arnold will not get involved in football decisions at all, Gab, which means that he must have listened to us on the show last week.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people who've had access to this, and, you know, Mark Ogden, our colleague, spent a whole hour with Ed Woodward, but it's all secret on background stuff, and he's not the only one, others too. Richard Arnold, they all tell us, oh, look, he's Woodward's mate, it's a continuation of Woodward. But I don't know. I mean, I know appearance is going to be different, but he seems different, right? Wow. Woodward was small, and he had the kind of scraggly beard. This guy looks bigger, he has the big beard, he has the glasses, which make him look intellectual. And I think if he's a smart guy and he saw, look, Woodward got so much crap for being front and center in footballing decisions, you know what? Maybe I'll be the guy with the final say-so, but maybe I'll just focus on the commercial
that
side
is very
and hire somebody really smart to do this, and I'll still be their boss.
It's very tempting to be at the heart of all the footballing decisions. All the players. Yeah, it is. Trust me, a lot of them said that. No, don't worry. I'll only do the kind of admin stuff, and then eventually they always go in.
All right. Time will tell. As for Aston Villa, they secured Philippe Coutinho on loan from Barcelona, provided he passes his medical.
Of course.
Jules, are you excited to have him back football-wise?
I am excited. I think people are going a bit over the top in this country for him coming back, as in, like, if he was exactly the same player that he was 4 years ago.
Was it Gerrard said? There's a reason you got the nickname Magician.
Yeah.
I didn't know that was his nickname. But
me neither. But also, at least Gerrard knows him really well. I think this is one of the big reasons why this move has been happening. Let's see what he can bring to that team. You know,
Slow risk, 6 months.
Yeah, exactly. You don't have to keep him after that, exactly. Sticking with Barcelona off the pitch, Gab, does this mean that they can finally register Ferran Torres, who still hasn't been registered, and the money that they're not going to pay for Philippe Coutinho now? Could that help? And also, why did Gerard Piqué feel like he had to reveal his wages on Twitter?
So on the first point, I think they're either there or they're very, very close. If this deal goes through, we don't have the exact details of how much they're going to be on the hook for Coutinho's wages, but it's certainly going to help because, as I've said before, I think the amortization and plus wages for Ferran Torres last 6 months of the season should be right around $6-7 million.
Yeah.
This Gerard Piqué thing was funny. So
it's amazing.
What?
The whole story. So some guy on TV said, hey, you earn 28 million gross a year.
Well, he's not some guy on TV.
No.
He's some sort of major Catalan.
Yeah, okay. But
and still. So he came out and he said, oh, there's three senior players, Barca born and bred, who this is how much they make. And he said, Gerard Piqué makes 28 million a year. Busquets, I think, made 23. And Sergio Roberto, 20, right? Gerard Piqué got so upset by this that he posted his pay slip. Well, it's not quite his pay slip. It's a deposit into his account.
Yeah, is it like the
yeah, for 2.3 million.
At the end of December.
At the end of December. Now, remember, in Barcelona, like a lot of Spanish clubs, they pay their players twice a year. So, first of all, it's not 28 million to 2.3 million. That's 2.3 million for half a season. So, double that, 4.6 million. Then you pretty much almost double it again because of the taxes. It would be something like 9 and a little bit, 10. Right? Which is what, like a third of what this other dude says? So it's interesting. Like, you know me, I'm all for transparency.
Well, good.
I am all for transparency.
But we knew that Piqué took a pay cut, right? The club said, okay, and Piqué said, I'm taking a pay cut.
Yeah, but he didn't take... But
I know, but if he was still on 28 million, how much was it
exactly
before if he took a pay cut?
Precisely. It's not like he took like a 70% pay cut, you know. So well done, Gerard Piqué, for me at least.
Yeah.
Jules, on the pitch, Barcelona gave up a late equalizer away to Granada. Gavi got himself sent off, a second yellow. He is 17 years old. Xavi said they need to be better at defending leads.
Well, he could have stopped at defending full stop, you know, not just the lead. but yeah, it was a game where they were not very good. I mean, Ousmane Dembele was, I think, had a horror show. For someone who's asking for so much money for Barcelona to give to him, for him to commit his future, and to put out such a poor performance.
I don't even think he's asking anymore. I think he's going
to
say,
justify what you're asking for and say, hey, look, I'm worth it because this is what I bring you. Instead, it was everything he did was wrong. And then you score a goal with Bad De Jong, who, you know,
Stop calling him Bad De Jong, because the other De Jong isn't pulling.
It's a cross and a header. He comes off after an hour, because apart from that,
but he had the other goal too, the one that was disallowed.
Yeah, yeah, for the slight gabby offside. Okay. Yeah,
okay. More goals than your boy Memphis Depay scored.
Okay. The paradox is, he's such not a Barca Xavi player.
Okay.
But
maybe given the other De Jong has been contributing, maybe this one shouldn't be the bad De Jong.
Yeah,
maybe
Bad De Jong. I'll stop calling you Bad De Jong. Real Madrid beat Valencia 4-1 as Vinicius and Karim Benzema. Karim the Dream bagged 2 goals each. Gab, it took a while to get going, and that penalty for the first goal was well dodgy. But it was pretty one-sided too.
Yeah. So, and Valencia
got really upset.
Their social media tweets during the game. Like, he tweets some stupid joke. Whoa! I hear there's like a number of robberies in Madrid, and you know, he links to Casa de Papel, money heist. I'm like, dude.
Come on.
First of all, in the end, Valencia deserved nothing from this game, both Gaia and Bordalas said so. Secondly, you know, you don't want it like that one. They could have given. I thought it was a clear handball on Piccini earlier, which should have been a penalty. But beyond that, incredible. Karim Benzema is 301 goals now.
Wow.
You look at the names around him. You know, he's just behind.
7 behind Di Stefano.
He's behind Di Stefano, and then above him, Raul. And then above that, Cristiano Ronaldo. And above Cristiano Ronaldo, of course, only skies.
Only skies.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Arsenal are dumped out by Nottingham Forest as Mikel Arteta plays a weekend side, including your boy Patino, whatever he is. Jules, did he forget Nottingham Forest aren't Morecambe? They're just one tier below them in the championship. I looked this up. I did my research. I don't follow the championship. They're in ninth place.
Yeah. I don't think he forgot that. He didn't forget either that a few years ago, they also knocked them out of the FA Cup.
Well, when he wasn't there.
But still, you know, this kind of thing happened. If you're not ready for it, I think they took the game for granted. I don't think it was a bad team. Certainly Odegaard, Martinelli, Saka all starting. It was just that if you don't turn up and have the motivation, the determination, you're not going to get it, especially away from home against a team that has got a lot of passion, less talent than you, but a lot of passion. And well done to Forrest, to Lewis Graben for winning this game. It feels like, and we will see in the next few quickies, that the Premier League team often react once they concede the first goal in a game like this. The problem is, if you concede in the 85th minute, you don't have time to react.
It also feels like you're making positive progress this season. Now you've got nothing to play for other than the top four trophy, where you've got to deal with United and with Spurs.
The
possibility of you
finishing
sixth and feel like you're treading water is very real.
Tottenham are given a say you're scared by Morecambe, who played in League One, the 30th of English football. Gab, they took the lead, Morecambe, which was pretty amazing, a bit like Forest, but unlike Arsenal, Spurs reacted.
They reacted. He sent on the cavalry. Here comes Kane. Here comes Lucas Moura. Here comes Oliver Skip. But these days, that's the cavalry.
It worked.
I thought Spurs had their chances earlier. Well done to Morgan for taking the lead. Mm. I don't think it's a reason for him to worry. Well, it would have been a reason if they'd been knocked out. Yeah, if they aren't, move on, live to fight another day.
Yeah.
Paris Saint-Germain get a 1-1 draw away to Lyon and Peter Bosch. There's no Messi. There's no Neymar. Although Messi is physically there.
Yeah.
There's no Neymar. There's a whole bunch of other guys out. Mm. For all the criticism they're getting, they're well ahead of where they were last season. Again, I did research. I looked this up.
Yeah, they only
have a bigger lead, but they have 5 more points. Yeah, what's the problem?
Exactly. Only one defeat this season, the one at Rennes. The problem is that they still don't play well, Gab. And this was different. This was all about reacting. They conceded early a really nice goal
the
by
Paqueta. How about Paqueta, that?
By the way, who they're thinking about trying to buy.
Who?
In the summer, Paqueta, the Paqueta.
Leonardo's going to buy him again.
Exactly. Okay. He bought him to Milan. So they reacted. They didn't were not great in the game, like in the way they played. Kylian hit the post twice, although it was the outside of the post, but still counts as hitting the woodwork. And then he signed the kids on. Edouard Michu, who's 19, Xavi Simons, who's 18, and they changed the game really for the last 25 minutes. And Michu created the goal. Kerrer, unlikely sort, scored it. It's 1-1. You didn't lose. You showed character. And you, again, came back into a game late, which is what this team do. They never give up. That's the positive. But again, I'm watching and I'm like, it should be better.
And it was against the Peter Bosz team.
Against Peter Bosz, who, by the way, is in loads of trouble. With a bunch of COVID cases in the squad, Bayern Munich lost on Friday night, which means against Mönchengladbach, which means that Borussia Dortmund's comeback win at Eintracht Frankfurt, Gab, allows Marco Rose's team to pull within 6 points. Do they look like title contenders?
No, they don't. They look terrible. Look, it's exciting. You're 2-0 down. You come back to 3-2, fighting spirit. Yeah. Again, this is a given, yeah? I mean, is a given, right?
The defending before that was just...
The setup was so bad. Did you see the little nutmeg on Emre Can?
Yeah.
But then again, these are the players you have. These pieces do not fit together. You can't have Can and Hummels with two fullbacks who attack all the time on their way up the pitch. You can't do that.
I agree.
Rosa makes it worse. They're playing a stupid diamond with Daoud at the bottom of it. Daniel Malin missing chances left, right, and center. I want to stop. Stop hearing about, ooh, Dortmund, they're such a well-run club. Oh, look, they buy these young players. They sell these young players. They pay a ton of money for young players. Some of them work out. Some of them do not.
Yeah.
But part of being your job isn't just getting your Panini sticker collection of young players. It's also put a team together that fits your manager.
True.
Okay, this is a horrendous thing. Next person, Michael Zorc, he's a genius. He's not a genius. This is horrible.
Where is this
you cannot
from that? I love
because
it.
It is offensive to me. This
I know.
Ridiculous defending coming. With the talent gap. Frankfurt also had having players missing.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, man.
Yeah,
do better. Right. Do better. Just play normal football.
I'm
not going to just blame Rose because Rose didn't put this team together.
No.
Although
right.
He's responsible.
Did you like the Erling Haaland? ¿Qué pasa, hermano? ¿Qué pasa, hermano?
Thank God. Where would this team be without Erling Haaland? Seriously, where your goals were coming from Haaland.
Very true.
The Africa Cup of Nations kicked off on Sunday with host Cameroon getting two penalties to come from behind and beat Burkina Faso. Jules, your thoughts beyond the shirt, of course.
Oh, the colours, the atmosphere. It was so amazing. Not so much the game in itself and certainly not Cameroon's performance.
Burkina Faso are rather muscular, huh?
Yeah.
Did you see like from the start? Boom, boom.
They go for it. Sangare with a goal after Onana's mistake. The fact is Burkina Faso complained because they had three starters, key players out for COVID when they said the test was not done in the right way, all that kind of stuff. So already you have a bit of controversy, but good win for Cameroon. The fans were amazing, even with only 80% capacity in the stadium. I just love it. I hope people watch it and enjoy it because I think it's going to be a great tournament. And sticking with the AFCON, Cap Verde beat Ethiopia in the other opener, Gab, also on Sunday afternoon. That early red card really helped though.
Yeah, it did. I was expecting more from Ethiopia, but Cape Verde just have better players. And
yeah,
you get the
yeah,
you get the sending off, what is it, inside 15 minutes.
15, yeah.
Probably could have been avoided. Went to VAR. I thought Cape Verde could have scored more in this, 11v10. And I think they look good to advance, actually. Liverpool stomp all over Shrewsbury 4-1 after going behind. They got a bunch of kids in the pitch, a bunch of guys I hadn't heard of.
Yeah.
But I had heard of Cade Gordon, and now I got to see him. Wow!
Yeah, pretty special. We've known for a long time, even at Derby County, where it was before, what a special talent he was. It's all about them maturing and you know.
He's not Ryan Brewster, or whichever you pronounce it.
No, we don't think he is. But again, he still has a lot more to prove and to show. But that was good. They went behind Liverpool, and you thought, okay, maybe. But no, it was not like Arsenal.
Player and a half, this guy.
Yeah. It was good. It was good, I think, for Klopp, who then revealed that, you know, they actually only had one proper positive COVID test in all the ones that they had before. So not too bad for them. Inter making 8 wins in a row in Serie A, beating Lazio 2-1. It's the big men at the back, Bastoni and Skriniar. Who does it?
They do it. They didn't stomp all over them, but I thought they were always pretty much in control. No Çalhanoğlu. And by the way, big Valentine to Bastoni. Look, really tall players can be good footballers. Scored a great goal, an assist. Man, they roll on and on. Wild game between Villarreal and Atletico Madrid.
Oh, yes.
Jules, was the 2-2 draw the right result?
I mean, first of all, a huge big up to Angel Correa, of course,
Correa
with the goal of the season.
Yeah.
Wow.
Reminiscent of Naim from the halfway line.
Naim or Wabi Kazri this season with Saint-Etienne as well.
Yeah, I know, but Naim, I feel like Naim's like from the halfway line. Other people have done it before.
Yeah, but Naim, the ball bounces before. Whereas this one, the ball is on the floor, which is much harder to hit the lob than Naim did. That's what the trajectory
of
the ball is.
Did you see where Geronimo really was? Like,
yeah. I mean, I would love to score a goal. Obviously, David Beckham is maybe the most famous ones of those kind. But if you haven't seen it, check it out.
By the way, and the guy who gave the ball away? Was it Pau Torres or?
I thought it was Pau Torres. Yeah. But I mean, you still don't think that losing the ball there will cost you a goal, to be fair. But and even with that goal, I still thought Villarreal were the better side. They should have won this game. It's funny because they played really well in the Champions League in some of the big games against United, against Real Madrid, and they have never won those big games, which I think is a bit harsh on them because they had enough chances certainly to win. And I guess it's a good draw in the end for Atleti away from home, not to lose a game.
No, but against a team that's always are better than their points say they are. And if you're in England and you watch Alberto Moreno play, you figure, oh, it's another dude with the same name who kind of looks like him.
No,
not
it is
the same
him.
Guy.
It is him. Milan beat Venezia 3-0 away and stay second in the table. Gab, they looked pretty good, didn't they?
They did. They played with energy. They scored. No, but they scored straight away, which always helps. It is Venezia, but Venezia, you know, they have some good players. They have Gianluca Busio.
With Juventus.
They have my man Tanner Tasman. But when they play with this kind of energy, then it makes a difference. Ibra giving up the penalty, letting your boy Theo take it for his brace. And by the way, we didn't mention this earlier, but since people love this idea of Englishmen playing football in Italy, Rome, of course, had three Englishmen in their starting lineup, Chris Smalling, Tammy Abraham, and Ainsley Maitland-Niles. I believe the last time a team played with three Englishmen in the starting lineup in Italy was Milan, when they won the title back in 1901.
What?
How awesome is that?
I love
that. He actually had four back then.
Absolutely love that.
Jules, you may be surprised to know this, but Zlatan had never scored against Venezia, which means he has now scored against 80 different clubs, matches a world record held by who?
Cristiano Ronaldo.
If it's a scoring record, it's probably held by Cristiano Ronaldo. And he's now scored in 23 different calendar years, equaling who?
Ryan Giggs
and
Francesco Totti.
There you go. This is impressive. Wow.
Legends. This is even more when you establish your title as a legend, and he might be able to beat that even if he scores next season 24th. If maybe someone who's never played in Serie A come up, I don't know. Help me out. I don't know. Cremonese, who are second in Serie B right now, maybe
could happen. Why not?
He would make 81 teams.
Even cooler is that he scored in the last millennium. He scored in 1999. But I don't know what happened to Zlatan in calendar year 2000. He didn't score at all. So he should be at 24 years.
He should be,
but he's not.
Julen Lopetegui, Sevilla won't go away, Gab. They pulled off a heart-fought win against Getafe 1-0, and they're still 5 points back behind Real Madrid, but with a game in hand.
He scored early. Great goal from Rafa Mir. He only scores good goals, pretty much. And then they hang in there. And they gut it out. They grit it out against Getafe. Getafe have been on a really, really good run. This was not easy at all.
Real Madrid last week.
Exactly. Kike Sanchez Flores is getting it done. Like a bad rash.
Yeah.
Sevilla's still there. Chelsea beat Chesterfield 5-1. Jules, I'm old enough to remember when Chesterfield were in the FA Cup semifinal.
Yeah.
That was actually 1997, wasn't it, in the 30s, in case you're wondering. Not as much of a challenge these days that they're no longer in the Football League.
Yeah, I would have loved my boy Jack Daniels. He's a huge fan, and he was very excited, had all his kit, and watched that semifinal of the FA Cup.
The man who's named after bourbon?
Well, yeah, I don't think that's his choice, but in the end, again, I mean, it's too much class. This man. But the best thing was probably when Chesterfield scored that goal. I think they were already 5-0 down. Or 4-0 down. And then the whole 6,000 fans of them just erupted at Stamford Bridge. It was beautiful. Speaking of Chelsea, two fun facts, Gab, about Roman Abramovich. He now has a Portuguese passport. Well done to him. And the second one, maybe more importantly, the club owes him £1.5 billion.
Yeah, so Roman Abramovich, obviously, you know, he had visa issues in the UK, whatever. Obviously, the guy's Russian. He got an Israeli passport because he's of Jewish descent.
Yeah.
And because he's specifically Sephardic Jewish descent, he used some sort of old law that allowed him to get a Portuguese passport. I guess, look, we can joke about this. We can joke about this, but with a Russian passport and with an Israeli passport, there's a lot of places it's more difficult to get into.
Of course.
With Portuguese passports, an EU passport, I think it's going to help them. The reason the club owe him $1.5 billion, look, it's been going on for a while.
Yeah.
Now, some owners put cash into a club via equity. He loans it to the club. Now, he owns the club. So in many ways, it's the same thing. There are some fiscal advantages. But this is a good counter because it's basically a perfect counter of the amount of money he has put directly into the club over the years. That is a huge amount of money.
Yeah.
More magic of the cup. Newcastle contrived to lose at home to Cambridge United. Jules, is this a big deal?
It is in a way because it's a bit humiliating. And at home, they had loads of chances. It's one of those days where the Cambridge United goalkeeper was amazing. Well done to him. It doesn't look good for you and for the new owners, of course. But you were never going to win the FA Cup anyway. I tell you that, Newcastle fans and Eddie Howe. You can focus now solely and fully on staying up. And, you know, signing the right players now this month for the few remaining days and then focus on staying up. And, you know, that would have been a distraction anyway. So in the end, might not be a bad thing that you are, even if it's against a lower...
Yeah, you got bigger fish
to
fry.
Yeah, exactly. Do you see the idea? Leicester v Everton was already postponed a few weeks ago in the Premier League and rescheduled for Tuesday, as in tomorrow when we record this. And now it's been postponed again. Gab, I guess Rafa Benitez would then hang up a bit more on his job.
It's a bit mean to poor old Raf. I can't believe you.
I mean, imagine
that.
If they lost to Hull City this weekend. They just about beat them.
Like, safety is paramount, and obviously, I don't want to see a game with a bunch of players injured. We're like, oh, play the academy guys. Like, we take some sort of, you know, perverse pleasure in seeing like the third goalkeeper play center forward. On the other hand, there's zero transparency. So obviously people are annoyed about this because we don't know who's out. We don't know for what. We don't know is COVID. We don't like, privacy. Come on, man. Completely. My boy, Domenico Tedesco, bounces back from the defeat to Arminia Bielefeld last week, rolling over Mainz 4-1. Jules, the way the Bundesliga is going, they can still get back in the 100%. Champions League races, right?
I mean, there was a big help from the red card.
But, you know.
Yeah. Mainz with down to 10 very early, which is a big help. Dominic Szoboszlai was amazing. So was Christopher Nkunku. It's such a better team than pretty much everything else apart from Bayern. I think it's a better team than Dortmund, too. So
shh. Don't let anybody hear you. Michael Zorc is a genius.
I think they can definitely finish in the Champions League places. Betis are held by Rayo Vallecano 1-1. Gab, they're still third. But Pellegrini was furious after that first half red card for Alex Moreno.
Yeah, this is a big deal to Betis because, of course, you know, they're in third. Look, they're under no illusions, but it's a big deal for them. They've spent money on the squad. Big deal for them in the Champions League. Rayo, of course, also fighting for the top four, surprisingly, perhaps. But, you know, they've been fun to watch. They've been good.
Yeah, Falcao.
But that early red card where, you know, it's one of those things where, the boot comes up, but the other guy, who clearly has a death wish, basically tries to head the ball, puts his head like at knee level. When that happens, you know, there's only so much you can
do. Exactly.
And Pellegrini, generally mild-mannered for a reason, he really not happy with that.
He lost it.
Jules, you were surprised at the sacking of Kovac on New Year's Day, but how did Monaco get on with his replacement, Philippe Clement? Massive excitement, right?
I know why you're a bit sarcastic there. Listen, they drew 0-0 at Nantes. He had some players missing. He'd been training only 3 days with the boys, so I don't think you can see much more. He lost a player after 25 minutes, one after 40 minutes, and then even Boadu could not finish the game. So it was a bit of a nightmare in terms of who was fit, who was unfit, etc. Ben Yedder has COVID, for example. They've got a few COVID cases. So he took the draw. I think he needs a bit more time, of course, to put his stamp on the team. Napoli, with their 101 absentees, stay third in Serie A as they beat Sampdoria 1-0. Gab, great goal from Andrea Petagna as well. Sees a kick. Lovely.
Here's a center forward, stout in size, backing up Osimhen and the rest of the guys. Built like a tank, yet hard to hit. Andrea Petagna rumbles on. He just won't quit. There you go. There's my little ode with a tip of the hat to NWA.
Just like this, NWA. Like,
I'm sorry, you mentioned it. Scissors quick. Like, oh, slightly ungainly, but you don't imagine somebody who looks like that, right? He's like a refrigerator, right?
It is a tank.
He's the flying refrigerator. Yeah, exactly. Unbelievable.
Well done.
Feel bad for my man Gerardo Rico Suave because Bayer Leverkusen won't take off.
Ah.
But Jules, how about that Patrick Schick? He scored again. He's got one fewer goal from open play in the Bundesliga this season than Robert Lewandowski. Why don't we say Schick for the Ballon d'Or?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, that 13 goals in his last eight Bundesliga games. 13 in eight. Yeah. I mean, this is like, you know, Messi and Ronaldo.
And can I point out, Leva has like Kimmich and Goretzka and Coleman and Gnabry and Sané and Müller passing him the ball. This guy's got, you know, Wirtz and a bunch of Muppets passing him the ball,
and
right?
And Diaby.
Okay.
And respect to Diaby. But yeah, you're right. And they almost lost that game somehow by Leverkusen. They had late equalizer to make it 2-2 and get at least a point. You could tell they're not far from something really good, and yet they keep dropping points at times. They just need Schick to keep scoring, and that's how they can finish top four for sure. Atalanta stay fourth in Serie A, putting six past Udinese in a 6-2 win. But Gab, should this game come with a little asterisk?
Look, I think so. Look, I mean, rules is rules and whatever, but Udinese had a whole slew of players out between COVID
and injuries. Why did they not postpone it?
Because there's no room in the calendar to fit it in, because of the Europa League, because, you know, the rules, again, no transparency, no rules, and also because there's a lot of people who take the line, play the kids from the academy. Yeah, so then you get games like this where Atalanta score six. Well, these weren't that bad, but I mean,
No, buddy, there was no match.
They have every right to be annoyed.
Yeah, completely.
Party time in the other half of Valencia as Levante record their first win of the season, beating Mallorca 2-0. Jules, it was what you might call a military victory with goals from Roberto Soldado and El Comandante Morales.
Wow, first win of the season. They had to wait 20 games, of course. They were the last team in the big five leagues not to have won yet, because Grote Fürth and obviously Newcastle were the last two before them to win. Good for them. I mean, they're still quite tight at the bottom of the table, so, you know, with
how
a bit
awesome
of momentum.
Would it be?
I know, it would be amazing if a team that had waited round 20 to get the first win still stay up. It would be pretty, pretty remarkable. Gab, remember Felix Weyer, the referee in that controversial Bayern Dortmund game and the Jude Bellingham comments at the end? Well, he's on holidays, and it seems that he could stay on holidays for a while.
Yeah, I mean, Bild's reporting that, you know, he might not come back. I mean, I know, I'm assuming he's going to come back from holiday at some point, but he might not come back to referee. Apparently, this has been extremely traumatic for him. He's taking time off. They're going to ease him back in.
Right.
I kind of feel a little bit, all right, you've had the whole thing. You had Bellingham saying what he said. People re-brought up the case from, you know, all those years ago and Robert Heuser. But if you're Zweier, okay, you knew that you did this. You knew that it happened back then.
I know.
You knew that you've been, you know, welcomed back in. You've relaunched your career. Some guy says something about you, reminds everybody of it, of something bad in your past, which is on the internet. I mean, are you really? And is it really such a trauma for you you need to consider retirement? I mean, I don't know. I hope there's
nothing. What would Mourinho say to that? Mourinho would say, like, hey, I need...
Yeah. Mourinho would not have much sympathy for Mr. Zweier. What a story in Estoril.
Oh, yes.
Porto were 2-0 down at halftime. They get a goal back, then another, and then with 3 minutes to go, Sergio Conceição engages in nepotism and sends on his son.
Oh, Francisco is 19, who has, I think, of the five sons that the Conceições have, I think the last one is very little, but he's probably the most talented of all. And coming on, scoring the winner. And it's not just a winner. It's because the day before, Sporting lost against quite a big surprise, which meant that Porto could go 3 points clear
at the
top.
3 points clear, rather than 1 point clear. Yeah.
And then you can just imagine the celebration. Sergio Conceição coming, hugging his son. Good slap on the face as well. Well done. It was
awesome.
It was just awesome.
Sergio Conceição, one of the good guys.
Yeah, exactly. And from joy to ugliness, Gab, Josh Cavallo, the only...
Or even Cavallo, since Cavallo. He's not Spanish.
Yeah, true. The only openly gay footballer in the men's professional game was subject to homophobic abuse when Adelaide United, his team, travelled to play Melbourne Victory at the weekend. I mean, I've got no words for this.
No words. I think to some degree, It was to be expected, but I take encouragement from this. I take encouragement from the fact that Cavallo has embraced his role as saying, like, look, I'm going to deal, I'm going to take the hits, and I'm going to go out, and I'm going to go, and I'm going to expose this every time it happens. He went on Instagram. He got support from everybody. We don't know if it was a minority, majority. It doesn't matter, right? But it's so important. Somebody's got to go and take the punches. This young man's got, he's got the guts to do it. He sounds like he's got the support of the whole world, or most of it. Let's all get behind him, because this is nonsense, and this has got to change.
Yeah.
So well done, Josh Cavallo. Jules, we got to come back on Thursday and do this again.
Yeah.
Because there's more midweek football.
Supercopa d'Espagna, for example.
Yes, the Italian Supercopa as well. You know, we can't all go to Saudi Arabia, so this time they're staying home. Just La Liga's going. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.
Real quick, what's the easiest choice you can make? Window seat over middle? Taco Tuesday over salad? What about selling with Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/gabjules.